Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes in caves. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mega Beach in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to the Long Box Guys. My name is Thomas Strange. With me, as always, is my clickety-clackety on the floor dog and my three best friends since I was a little kid. Mike Manning, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent tonight, and I have a cranberry and vodka, mostly vodka, and a Michelob Ultra to drink because I like Chris Pratt.
Who doesn't like Chris Pratt? Maybe Maria Ferris. Josh, how are you doing? Andrea Ferris? Ferris something.
Anna Ferris.
Thank you. Josh, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
I am a little under the weather tonight, and I am drinking water. Just staying hydrated like a good boy.
Hella hydrated. Tommy, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
I am doing fine, and I am drinking Jameson Private Reserve. Ooh. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing great. I'm drinking some just plain old Jameson today, and I'm really looking forward to today's conversation because we're talking about a character I really like a lot, and that's the Green Arrow. Mikey, do you want to give us the background on the Green Arrow?
Sure. The Green Arrow, also known as Oliver Queen, is a DC Comics superhero created by Mort Weisinger and George Papp. He first appeared in More Fun Comics number 73 way back in 1941. Now, there was another Green Arrow, Oliver Queen's son, Connor Hawke, who was created in 1994 by Kelly Puckett and Jim Aparo. He has not shown up in the New 52, the latest incarnation of the DC Universe. And for this podcast, when we talk about Green Arrow, we're referring to Ollie. Powers, he has no superpowers, but he is probably the most skilled bowman in DC continuity. He's also skilled in boxing, kickboxing, judo, karate, and eskrima, as well as sword fighting. He has armed himself with an arsenal of trick arrows, and he's had a number of other things, including the aeroplane and the aero car. Fun Alec fact, can you guys tell me what three characters Green Arrow was based on?
Well, go for the obvious, Robin Hood.
Robin Hood's one.
Batman's
two, because Oliver Queen was a wealthy playboy, had a sidekick wearing red named Speedy, and a clown supervillain was his first major foe, the guy named Bullseye.
I'm going to just hazard a guess here and say the Lone Ranger.
It's a good guess, but it's from another movie serial called The Green Archer, which was actually based on a novel. So Mort Weisinger was a big fan of that book and the movie series, so that's where he created him. Now, when you talk about Green Arrow, again, he was one of those golden age creations, but he never was popular enough to get his own series. He was a backup feature for a long time and also a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, not gaining enough fame to make it into the big gun in the DC Comics, which was the Justice Society of America. However, when we talk about the transition from the 40s into the 50s, before the entering into the Silver Age of comics, we always talk about the big three who survived. That's Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. However, Green Arrow was also one of the people who survived. He survived as a backup superhero in Adventure Comics. So when we talk about the big three, it should technically be the big four. Did anybody ever watch Smallville?
No.
No. Green Arrow was one of the main characters in Smallville, and the logic behind that was, I guess they didn't want to let them use a young Bruce Wayne to make a world's finest for Smallville, but actually it dates back to Adventure Comics number 258, where a young Oliver Queen crosses over with Superboy in that comic. So when they brought Oliver Queen in to be the Batman-esque character in Smallville, they were kind of going back into that comic book history, but also repeating history. Because in the Silver Age, he didn't get a science fiction makeover like the Flash did and like Green Lantern did. Instead, they brought him in to be a member of the Justice League of America, pretty much keeping the same thing he was from the Golden Age intact. The only reason they brought him in was to be a substitute for Batman, because the editors for Superman and Batman didn't want overexposure for their characters, so they were only going to let them be reserve members of the Justice League. Instead, when they had the Green Arrow substitute for Batman and the Martian Manhunter substitute for Superman in most of the early comics. Later on, that changed, but in the initial run of Justice League, that's how it was. He never really changed from the Golden Age up until 1969, when, because Green Lantern was failing and they didn't give a shit anymore, they turned it over to Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams. And I'm not going to talk too much about it other than to say Neil Adams changed Green Arrow's look, gave him the Van Dyke, and re-changes his costume. But Denny O'Neil makes him the liberal counterpoint to Hal Jordan's conservative Green Lantern. The O'Neil Adams take on Green Arrow pretty much solidified him. Later on in the late 70s, they returned, not as politically savvy this time, with Mike Grell taking over as the art. And Green Arrow remained the hothead and the liberal bastion of the Justice League. He had one little miniseries, but in 1987, everything changed for the Green Arrow with Mike Grell creating the Longbow Hunters, three-issue series. I'm not going to talk about that because I'm sure when we talk about favorite series, somebody's going to bring that up. Then, because of the success of the Longbow Hunters, they moved Green Arrow to Seattle, gave him a much grittier appearance. He got rid of the name The Green Arrow. He just used regular arrows. He was known either as Arrow or the Vigilante. There were no superheroes appearing in this second volume of Green Arrow up until issue 88, long after Mike Grell had left the series. In fact, that's one of the reasons Grell left the series, because he didn't want Green Arrow to be part of the continuity. He took a lot of his storylines that he did in the John Sable freelance and brought them over into the Green Arrow series. One of the important things about Green Arrow to remember is back when he was a member of the Justice League, he developed a relationship with Black Canary, who came over from Earth 2, and that series continued not only in the Green Lantern and Green Arrow series, but also through all incarnations of the Green Arrow. In the 1990s, he dies on a plane. And to harken back, do you remember what Green Arrow was like in The Dark Knight Returns, Tom?
As a matter of fact, yes, I do.
Okay, so you remember how he was missing an arm?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's on a plane with a bomb that's about to detonate over Metropolis, and his arm is stuck inside the bomb, and Superman is going to cut his arm off with his heat vision and save him. And Arrow tells him, "No, don't you do that to me." And so Superman, the explosion happens. Superman doesn't save Green Arrow. He ends up dying in the other continuity. Superman does cut off his arm, and that's what sends Green Arrow down the path in The Dark Knight Returns.
Actually, Mike, I believe Green Arrow says, "What good is an archer without an arm? I'd rather die than live without my arm."
And so he does, until Kevin Smith brings him back in Green Arrow Volume 3, a series called Quiver. That's all you need to know. Green Arrow comes back to life because Hal Jordan, now as the Spectre, feels really guilty about not being there to save Ollie when he needed his help. Resurrects Ollie's body without his soul, and he becomes a vessel that could be taken over by a demon. And in order to stop the demon from coming, any demons from possessing him, they bring in, Ollie sacrifices himself in heaven and comes back to Earth. Nothing of major note happens to Green Arrow until the New 52. They reboot him. This time he is a member of the Outsiders in a series, part of his series, The Outsider War, written by Jeff Lemire, which is excellent. He becomes a member of the Amanda Waller's Justice League of America to be the counterpoint for Batman if the Justice League goes bad. And they introduce characters from the Arrow TV show, including Diggle and Felicity Smoke. but he doesn't have the relationship with Black Canary. When they do the Rebirth series, he again meets Black Canary, and they have a fling, and they feel like there's some sort of connection, but they can't figure out what it is because of the missing time, 5 years that have been stolen out of DC continuity. And that brings us right up to today.
Ding! It is now today. Thank you for taking that trip with Mike Manning.
I'm sorry. I love the Green Arrow. He was one of my favorite superheroes, too.
That's all right. That was actually more condensed than I thought you were going to pull off.
It was no Cyclops.
It was no Cyclops.
There was no Cyclops.
That is true. I'm sure we all have some really favorite ones to go over. I have a couple, and I don't think anyone's going to get mine, so I'll let Josh go first, knowing that Josh isn't the biggest fan of the Green Arrow. But do you have anything that you can hang your hat on this one?
Nope.
It's okay.
Yeah, you know, I've just never read any Green Arrow.
Martian Manhunter is one of Mike's favorite characters, and I have very few of those that I really like, so that's all right. So we'll go over to Tommy.
All right. I have tons of Green Arrow stories that I love, but one of my favorites has always been the senator's been shot.
God damn it, really? Are you kidding me?
Everybody drink.
You son of a bitch. That is my absolute favorite one of all time. God damn it.
Brave and the Bold, number 85 in 1969 by Bob Haney and Neil Adams. This was before the Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams bent on social justice, which is why I thought it would be out of Tom's purview, because I figured Tom would go for the Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill Cross America storyline. I figured he would jump right to that. So I thought this would be safe, but apparently it's not. But in this storyline, Senator Paul Carhart was just reelected. He is sponsoring a bill, an anti-crime bill. He gets shot. The governor calls Bruce Wayne, asks him to take over the senator's duties while he is in the hospital, is in a coma, so that the anti-crime bill can be passed through. And Bruce Wayne is, like, shocked about this. He thought for sure that Edmund would be the replacement for his father. And the governor says, no, it's got to be you, Bruce. You helped craft the legislation. And so Bruce accepts that he needs to be a congressperson, and he becomes a congressperson. In parallel to this storyline, Oliver Queen is at the same time putting in a low bid to revitalize a land in the state that is going to save the state from bankruptcy and revitalize the area. Putting in bids opposite of him is a crime lord, the Minotaur, who is trying to steal Oliver's plans and ruin that deal. And all the while, this psychiatrist, son of the senator, Edmund, is kind of put in the middle of all this. Bruce Wayne comes out to Edmund that he's Batman. Green Arrow comes out to Edmund that he's Green Arrow. It's just a fantastic book with twists and turns, and both Batman and Green Arrow are trying to decide which part of their persona is more important, their vigilante side or their corporate side, and it's just a wonderful book, and that's why it's my favorite.
Also, the first appearance that Neil Adams does the pencils, and that's the whole costume change for the Green Arrow is that issue. And written by Bob, I don't give a shit about continuity, Haney.
It's true.
How did you make one of my favorite stories sound so goddamn boring? God damn it, Tommy. Just putting that out there. The reason I love that story so much is, you know, it was a fast-paced, terrific story. I love that the psychologist had to struggle with the fact that he knew both Bruce Wayne was Batman and that Oliver Queen was Green Arrow. And at the end, he hypnotizes himself to forget both secret identities, which I thought was insanely fun. It's a terrific comic book, much funner to read than LLT's Letting On.
But it was a great story.
It was a great. It was.
And it was filled with with great social impacts in it. You know, I mean, what's more important, fighting crime on the street level or fighting it as a congressperson? You know, there was a lot of different things in there that got you to think about the world in general.
Yeah, also one of the greatest covers of all time. You know, Batman holding the body of the senator while the Green Arrow takes aim at someone slightly off screen. It's terrific, terrific artwork. That really was one of my very favorite. That was going to be my first pick. And you guys already called it. My second pick is the Green Arrow, Green Lantern run across the United States, where they kind of do a juxtaposition of liberalism versus a more fundamentalist viewpoint. Green Lantern being a more conservative military type, while the Green Arrow was more of the liberal hippie type. They have all these adventures across the United States in this run where they're trying to find out what's wrong with America. They think America is ill and they're trying to find the cure. That's kind of the way this is all wrapped up. And the cure is that people have to start talking to each other a little bit more about, you know, our political views in a way that, you know, brings us together instead of tearing us apart. Unfortunately, there was also an alien behind the whole thing in the series, which I didn't like at the very end. So some of the great comic books of that one was they took on issues such as who do you defend? You know, people who are protesting or, you know, the cops who are trying to put down a protest. They talked about Indian rights. They talked about gay rights. They talked about just about everything, African-American rights. You know, when it came to civil rights, they touched on a lot of things.
Heroin.
They also talk about union busting.
Yeah.
Yep. Union busting. Absolutely. That was a great one. I talk about that one when I talk about protests as reflected in comic books. That was another great one. They really hit a lot of things, and a lot of weird stuff happens in that one.
Yeah. They also talked about spoiler alerts because of the whole alien thing.
The alien thing was so stupid. I don't care if everyone knows. In the end, it was Jar Jar Binks for some reason.
Yeah, well, you know, greatest assassin of all time.
But they took him out back and killed him with a shovel.
Death with a shovel.
Oh my God! I would totally read that comic.
Every day. We gotta get this thing published. Jar Jar Binks is taken out back with a shovel.
Shovel.
Beaten to death. It's my kind of comic book, guys.
Senator Banks, your car is awaiting.
Mike, what was your favorite run?
Without a doubt, my favorite run was the Green Arrow Volume 2. That was the one where he moves to Seattle and gets that gritty look. It was an amazing series, and it was the mature line for DC Comics before they actually had a mature line. It was The Question by Denny O'Neill and The Green Arrow by Mike Grell that paved the way for comics to come like the Vertigo series. Without those comics, I would argue, they would not have taken the more adult tone that they ended up taking. They were groundbreaking at the time for the level of maturity that they had. If you don't want to dive all the way into that, the 2001-2007 series, I think it's volume 3 or 4 of Green Arrow. I talked about it briefly with Kevin Smith writing Quiver, which is the return of Green Arrow. After Smith finished his run, there's a run by Brad Meltzer, which I don't know if you've read it, Tom, or not, but I think you would really like it because when Green Arrow died, he actually hired Shade, the supervillain from the Golden Age, the enemy of the Flash, to come and destroy all of his identity, anything that would tie him back to being the Green Arrow. He had him take care of all these artifacts because he didn't want it getting out. After Barry Allen sacrificed himself in Crisis on Infinite Earths, the name Barry Allen got out as the Flash, and he didn't want anybody to know that Oliver Queen was Green Arrow because he knew that anybody he had connections would be in danger from his old enemies. So he hires Shade to take care of it because Shade's not, although he's a villain, is also immortal. And he knows he's going to be around a long time and can take care of anybody in the Justice League. So now that he's come back, Meltzer writes a series where the stuff that Shade couldn't get to take care of, he has to go take care of and find. And he goes on the road with Speedy, Roy Harper, a.k.a. Arsenal. And it is a great throwback story where it's like a father and a son reuniting and going on a road trip. It is just a thing of beauty, the interaction between the two, where he's used to this Speedy being a kid, and now he's a grown man with a kid of his own, and he's having to deal with the fact that, hey, the dynamic between us has changed. We're equals now. We're both fathers, in a sense. And it's just a really good story. I think Brad Meltzer, I know everybody hates him from Identity Crisis because he killed Sue Dibney. I think Meltzer loves DC Comics so much that when he writes a series, he loves to throw in all these Easter eggs and tie it back into the history from when he read comics as a kid. And he does an excellent run on that series. So that's the one I'd recommend. Starts on, I think, issue 16 and continues for about 5 or 6 issues.
Will you email me that those issues so I can make sure I get them? Because that does sound something that I would like to read.
Oh, one more. Issue number 33. Where he tells the story how Speedy was jonesing because of the heroin. They were getting into arguments. He thinks he blows up the Aero car, but it turns out on eBay. And so he and the scavenger get in a bidding war from the fireman who saved the Aero car, trying to buy the Aero car back. It's just a fun one issue. One and done. It's one of my favorite issues of the whole series.
That does sound amazing.
I'll send you guys that link too.
Send me that link. That sounds like a good one too. Josh, did any of these? I know that the Arrow guys just don't do it for you. Any of those tempt you? It's okay if it doesn't.
I mean, I have a strong tendency to listen to Mike's recommendations. I'm actually reading the Vision Family this week. I picked up the hardcover, so I can be swayed to read these things with my giant backlog of comics, but yeah, it'll happen.
We'll turn your heart at some point, or we'll turn your ankle so we'll know you from your limp.
That's right.
Mikey, that brings us to the front of the law box. Anything good up there, buddy?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the members of the Long Box Legion, Todd up in Seattle, is going to really enjoy this pick this week. Jeff Lemire's latest Image comic called Gideon Falls, and I'm going to suggest you guys will all like it too. It is a horror comic, and the artwork is by Andrea Sorrentino with letters by Dave Stewart. It is visually stunning, and it tells two different stories of a man who has mental problems, and a priest arriving in a small town that actually the stories end up converging through the artwork. It is a haunting tale. I should not have read it right before I went to sleep. But again, Gideon Falls, the new Jeff Lemire comic by Image Comics. Everybody should drink because I'm going to highly recommend this to everybody.
Highly recommend it. The last horror comic book that you highly recommended to me was Lock and Key, and that was another one where I had to stop every once in a while. I'm like, this, it's too close to bed. I'm not going to read any more of this shit.
Yeah.
Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
Well, I was going to talk about Quiver, but Mike has already talked about it a lot. So instead of talking about Green Arrow Quiver, I'm going to talk about Green Arrow Hunter's Moon, which is from the Green Arrow 1988-98 run. It was written by Mike Grell. He did not do the art. He wrote it. The art was done by Dick Giorgiano and Ed Hannigan. And it was a 6-issue series in which Green Arrow is hunting down a child killer while he's racing to find a biological weapon that has dropped from orbit that the Chinese and the Russians are trying to get to. It's a a weapon that could have great value in that it could do wonderful things for the species, or it could wipe out stuff. And the Russians have approached Green Arrow to get it, and he has to try to get it before the Chinese get to it. And it's a great storyline. Like I said, it's 6 issues. It also has a bunch of social justice things in it, in that he's also tackling gay bashing in this run, and it's just a fantastic book. And it has some great artwork by Dick Giorgiano in it.
All right, that sounds like another one I'm going to have to read at some point. All good recommendations. I already talked a little bit about civil rights and social justice, but I do want to mention really quickly from that Green Arrow, Green Lantern run, and that is No Evil Shall Escape My Sight. In this issue, an African-American person walks up to the Green Lantern and says, I've seen you do a lot of things for the Purple Man. I've seen you a lot of things for the Orange Man. What have you done for the Black Man? And the Green Lantern has no response to that. He says, you know, he just can't answer. It's a very powerful series of 3 panels, and it's one of the ones that really made me enjoy this series. So it's No Evil Shall Escape My Sight, and that would be Green Lantern Volume 2, issue number 76, back in April of 1970. If you get a chance, read that one too. Cover by Neil Adams, and a terrific one. But that was a little bit tangential, and that's Josh's purview. Josh, you got a tangent for us today?
I have a tangent, but it's also relevant to today. So it's a relevant tangent, a relangent. So the relangent of the day is, what drives DC Comics to select real and or imagined cities? There's not a lot of rhyme or reason I see. So, Mike, I figure if anyone's got an idea about this, okay. I just don't know. What do we think the motivation behind DC Comics is between, you know, making up cities and using real cities?
D20. They just roll those dice. If they hit the city, they hit the city. If they don't hit the city, they make up a name.
Well, I think initially they were making up cities in the early days based on kind of like real cities, but they didn't want to use the real city names. And then eventually, once Marvel started doing it, I think they just started being like, screw it, we're just going to use real cities. But that's just my personal opinion. It's not based on anything. Like,
so it's a hunch.
It is a hunch. I mean, I know Metropolis was kind of based on a couple of different real cities. I know one of them was based on one of the cities it was based on was Toronto. I can't remember the other city date that it was based on.
Cleveland.
I hear that place rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's no reason behind it that I know of. It's just that when they first started creating comics, I would hazard a guess, but again, this is just a guess, that they didn't want to make it one particular city because they didn't want to have anybody feel like they're left out of the story. I mean, if you set it in Boston and you're a Yankees fan, you're not going to be too fond of the Boston story, vice versa. That could be it. But I think it's mainly they just didn't want to put it in a specific city. But all the cities that they did use had, you know, Keystone City is basically Kansas City, right? Central City is St. Louis, for all intents and purposes. You know, Star City is San Francisco.
Why break the mold and then start picking like Seattle, right? Like,
why did they start using real cities? Is mainly the writers wanted to get more realistic settings. So that's why Mike Rell was the one who decided, all right, I'm going to take Green Arrow out of Star City and I'm going to put him in Seattle. And then, you know, when they put him in an actual city, it's easier for the artists. They can grab skylines and everything like that and set it, you know, in that city.
Yeah, that just seems like an odd choice, and it muddles up American geography.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. DC is also...
You also don't want to destroy everyone's, you know, home every month. Metropolis gets worked over pretty bad.
Yeah. And the, And Marvel does it too. I mean, there's no Wakanda, unfortunately.
Sure.
I did like in Quiver that in Green Arrow Quiver that Oliver North tries to buy a bus ticket to Coastline City.
Did you say Oliver North?
I'm sorry, Oliver Queen. Oliver Queen tries to buy a bus ticket to Coastline City, and the woman selling the tickets is like, "What are you, crazy? There's no such city."
Well, yeah, because it had been blown up. It had been destroyed by Mogul.
But I just thought that was hilarious that he's trying to buy a ticket to a fictitious city and it's no longer there.
That is hilarious.
Not to Hal Jordan, it's not.
Fair enough.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon.
It's just the right amount of time.
Yeah.
Just the right amount of time. And speaking of the right amount of time, that's about the time we have tonight, folks. We're going to wrap it up with some plugs. Anyone got anything good to plug tonight?
As always, you should go to KirbyCracklemusic.com and check out Kirby Crackle. They provide our geek rock music every week. And you guys are going to be at Philadelphia Comic Con. Not only are you going to have a table, you're going to be doing some panels. Wizard Con, sorry. When is that, by the way?
It's May 17th to the 20th.
Ah, awesome. So all it's the Longbox Legion should go check that out.
Wait, did we already get picked up for some panels? I don't remember seeing that.
No, but I'm positive you will.
All right. I like you. You have a good attitude, my friend. And I would just like to take a second to plug the Longbox Guys Patreon page. We have a lot of subscribers going over to there now. Just go over to Patreon, the Longbox Guys. Take a look at some of the content. Every week we get a slightly longer version of this podcast because we add in something we call the GOAT, which is the greatest of all time. This week I think we talked about the greatest assassins of all time. I think we made some pretty good points about who should be called the greatest assassins of all time. And Patreon page. It's a great way of just throwing us a couple bucks to help us keep this podcast alive and well and comic book research happening all the time. Tommy, you got anything to plug?
I'd like to plug geekorthodox.com, purveyors of fine, geeky t-shirts and stained glass prints and other geeky things. They have some great Johnny Skywalker Rocks glasses and posters and other great stuff.
They also made some fine progress on fixing their gutters this week. Congratulations, Tammy.
And if you're going to South Carolina Comic-Con, which is March 24th and 25th, you can see geekorthodox.com there. They'll be there selling their wares.
Yeah, buy their stuff. It's awesome.
Their stuff really is awesome. We got a lot of their stuff here. All right, I guess that just about does it.
I would like Mikey. Sorry.
I had one more question for you, Mikey, but go ahead.
Oh, I think we should also recommend some of our fellow podcasters. I mean, obviously, this is the podcast you should listen to, but if you're going to listen to some other ones, if you're a fan of gaming, sex robots, check out Who's Next. And if you're a fan of movies, check out Movies Made Me.
And let's not forget our friends, the Nolan Nerd Couple, another great podcast.
Indeed.
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 All right. Is that it for plugs?
Yeah.
All right, then. Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And Josh, we're going to be in Philadelphia now, surely. The Reading Station, where we get those awesome donuts. That must be your sector.
It's temporarily my sector while I've gone donuts.
Damn right it is.
And destroy blind blood sugar.
Oh, my God. Those are such good donuts. Say such what you will donuts. About the Amish. They make a fine donut.
They make a fine donut.
They make a fine donut. Tommy, any last words there, buddy?
Oh, my God, those Amish donuts. I mean, the Elvis donut is like heaven pooped in your mouth. It's like so delicious.
Pooped in your mouth.
Yeah. So delicious.
And you don't have to worry about buttons or zippers.
It's true. Yeah. But anyway, everybody, please give. Please give to our Patreon. Please.
Cider.
Is that good? Please give to our Patreon.
Back to the room of pain for you, the red room.
We barely have the electrons to support our podcast. Please give. Please, won't you? Please?
Someone mute that guy. All right, that's going to do it for us. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just try to promote what you love. You're going to live a lot longer. And Wakanda forever.
Oh, Wakanda for today.
Wakanda next week.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, once they start giving away the technology, I mean, they might not last that long. So Wakanda for today.
No, everybody go see Black Panther. The movie's already made $1 billion. The odds are you've seen the Black Panther movie. But if you haven't, go see it before next week's podcast, because next week we're going to be talking and breaking down the Black Panther movie.
We should just do that at political rallies. If someone's just talking shit, everyone should just start going.
It really should be Mbaku's tail.
Yeah, right.
Tail.
Love it, Mbaku. All right, love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We melt the highway miles away like sunfire. No stopping tonight.
That out of there.
Do you?
I got in trouble for calling somebody a